We're all showing up to our first picket. I can be honest and say we're all scared. We don't know what to expect.
The Chicago teacher strike, framed that way by striking math teacher Patrick Clancy on All Things Considered, framed this way by Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
This is not a strike I wanted. It was a strike of choice that is totally unnecessary.
A roller coaster week for Rahm Emanuel, of course, President Obama's first chief of staff, from the Democratic convention to the wrong end of a picket line. With me now for a New York take on the Chicago teacher strike is Esther Fuchs, Columbia University political science professor, who was an advisor to Mayor Bloomberg on education and other issues in his first term and has studied Chicago politics. Hi, Esther. Thanks for talking about this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And I know this is partly about pay and longer hours, but more so, are these the same issues we have here in New York and around the country, teacher evaluations based on standardized tests, and as the teachers see it, union busting and privatization through the charter school movement?
I think you're absolutely right. And this teachers union battle, and it is a battle in Chicago right now because they do have a very activist, aggressive head of the teachers union who was just elected, Karen Lewis, is something that is playing out in different ways in cities across the country, but is really symptomatic of a larger problem around public education and also the role of unions in American politics. And I think we're, you know, the changes are extraordinary now. And for me, the frustrating part of this is the confusion of the issues around unionization, and I believe the importance of unions, and education policy. And so what we're finding is, you know, the protection of union interests in a lot of cities that really don't comport with the needs of a 21st century public education system, a system that has to be about educating kids and really can't be about protecting jobs anymore.
So, listeners, if you have ties to Chicago, if you have ties to education here or anywhere else, or if you just want to ask a question or give your thoughts on the Chicago teacher strike, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So do you see this, Esther, no matter which side anybody comes down on it, as having national significance for how teachers will be evaluated outside Chicago and for the future of tenure and the old seniority system of last hired and first fired in times of layoffs, and for that matter, for the place of non-union charter schools?
Yes, Chicago is very important. Chicago, you know, was, I guess it was in 1980 that Secretary of Education William Bennett called Chicago the worst public school system in the nation. And Chicago was one of the first cities, if not the first city, to begin the reform agenda through a form of decentralization, but also accountability and bringing in a CEO under Mayor Daley. That was Paul Vallis. Some of your listeners will remember him. And so there was an early effort in Chicago to focus on reform of the both managerial infrastructure of the public schools as well as the pedagogy, but also bringing this issue of accountability in front and center, and bringing in the question of charters and vouchers. So Chicago was sort of the lead on this. New York City was not. You know, we didn't start our experiment until the first term of Mayor Bloomberg. And many of the programs that we put in place and the approach of using vouchers and charters come from the Chicago model. And the point of, unfortunately, when you look at the evaluations now, is that the changes haven't really produced the kinds of results that educators would like to see. So while there's improvement and there's been change to a certain extent, it's not as dramatic in terms of the numbers of kids who are graduating high school, in terms of the number of kids who read at grade level or do science and math at grade level. So this is really important struggle right now. Teachers in Chicago feel disrespected, as they do around the country. And in many ways, they've been scapegoated in a system which has been very politicized for many years at the administrative level. I'm not talking about in the classroom, in which I believe the country had turned its back on public education in our inner cities. And so the call for change is really important. It's politically charged, and you know, I believe there are no villains in this story, and I believe it's important not to demonize teachers. We need excellent teachers to make our schools work. But if the unions continue protecting mediocre teachers and really don't focus on evaluation and standards, it will be very easy to blame them. And I think certainly the Republicans have taken that tack in national politics, and the Democrats are on the defensive.
Richie on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Richie.
Yes, hi. Listen, I'm a union person, all right? I just recently retired. Mm-hmm. And I see this attack on teachers and unions and all this gobbledygook about mediocre teachers as part of an attack on labor in general. I mean, the communications workers for Verizon are being attacked. The teachers in New York are being attacked. And I like to bring up what Newt Gingrich said back in the 1990s when he said, basically, if we break the teachers, we break organized labor. And that's what this is all about, I'm telling you.
Richie, thank you. Well, let's see what Esther Fuchs thinks about that. And Esther, I wonder if you're on two sides of this question as somebody who was an advisor to and an ally of Mayor Bloomberg on his education reforms, but also somebody who I know has a long progressive history of supporting the union movement.
Yes, I mean, I have to say that's why it's very important to get the issues right here, and it should not be about demonizing labor, demonizing teachers, or attacking the union movement in and of itself. And, you know, that's part of the problem. The absolute blanket defense that some union leaders want to push forward is not going to work at this point. I think Randy Weingarten understood that in New York. She understands that from her national perch at the head of the AFT. She talks about new teacher contracts and accountability and metrics and understanding the need for change, and she focuses on places like New Haven and San Francisco, which have put new teacher contracts in place in which there is some modicum of accountability. And so I think it's just a huge mistake for union leaders not to recognize that there needs to be significant and serious change right now. The more their heels are dug in, the easier it is to attack them from the right. And the problem is that the schools are failing our kids. And you just don't want to be on the wrong side of protecting the status quo when, in fact, you look at the status quo and it has been historically an enormous failure. You know, parents who have choices don't want to send their kids to schools, you know, where 30% of the kids read at grade level, or 40% are graduating and going on to college, or graduating high school and going on to college. So, you know, in New York, we've had our battles, but I think there's a fundamental understanding that change is important. That's why the mayor was given control, and change is never quick enough for anybody. But certainly, even Randy understood this. I don't know about Michael Mulgrew. I think he's more in the tradition of Karen Lewis in Chicago, and we could be in for a rough time in New York City as well.
Rachel in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Rachel. Rachel,
yeah,
are you there? Hi.
Hello?
Go ahead, Rachel, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I think that perhaps there may be some miscommunication here. I think that New York is going about this in a, I would say, an individual way for New York. We are a very unique city. We are dealing with a mayor who has made a lot of changes.
And you're a New York City teacher, I gather, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Uh-huh.
They has been willing to take the schools in a new direction. It's been painful, but it's been, by far, you'd have to say, things are improving. You know, with change comes pain. And I think that, you know, Chicago, yes, they've been out there. They've always been very out front. Many moons ago, they were out front. I think New York just has a little different way of going about the negotiation process without our kids suffering as much and without having to put it out there as publicly. We are working very hard behind closed doors to come up with a settlement that, you know, the teachers can live with as well as the politicians.
Here in New York. By the way, Rachel, we received a tweet a short time ago that says, many of my teacher friends are wearing red to New York City schools today in solidarity. Do you see that around you?
I do. I personally choose not to. I do have solidarity. However, again, I'm not one of those people. And I did work for the union at one point. You know, I was a chapter cheerleader for a school. However, I truly believe that we are trying to build a system of good schools, not a good school system.
Rachel, thank you very much. So, Esther Fuchs, why, in your opinion, did it come to a strike in Chicago when it hasn't in other places with Rahm Emanuel, of all people, as mayor?
Well, I think that the frustration there reflects the fiscal crisis in the city and in the school system. They have a $1 billion operating deficit that they're facing in the next year, so the mayor rescinded a promised raise. That always gets people aggravated. And he has a proposal in to extend the length of the school day, and that hasn't been really worked out. You combine this rescinding of a raise with a fairly radical, I would use the word aggressive, union leader, and also a mayor who has a lot to lose with a failure here right now. And I think that the teachers thought this was a perfect place for them to push back and be aggressive.
Is it only the union leader who's aggressive? Mayor Emanuel's schools chief there, Jean-Claude Brizard, came from Mayor Bloomberg and Joel Klein's education department here in New York. And according to, I think it was Joan O'Sara's column today, when he was the Rochester schools chief, he did an even better job than Klein of alienating teachers and parents. Did you know him?
I did know him a little bit, but not very well. I think you have to add him to the mix, but I think the mayor is involved in this. It's not just the chancellor. And it surprises me that Rahm Emanuel let it get this far, given the presidential election. But I think that the union understood that he is the one who has an extraordinary amount to lose at this moment. So they pushed, and they pushed aggressively. I think from a public relations point of view, strikes by teachers are generally disasters. Parents have no place to put their kids. It really alienates them, and it makes them look irresponsible, particularly in the beginning of the year like this. But politically, this is very difficult for Rahm Emanuel.
Christine in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello, Christine.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling as a former college instructor who taught composition, and I always ask for the remedial composition kids because they were the kids that were really passed over by the school system. And I'm also calling as a parent of a child with special needs. And I will tell you that one of the things I was appalled at when I saw the head of the teachers union talk about this strike was she didn't mention the kids at all. And as a parent, you have almost absolutely no recourse against a bad teacher. My son has Tourette's, and I have had teachers look me square in the eye as the kid is ticking out like mad, saying, I don't see anything wrong. They treat you as though if your child has any sort of special needs and is not, and they will not lift a finger to help your child unless your child has been classified. And then what happens when he's classified, very often he's put in, for better or worse, what are called gladiator classes. You know,
and Christine, I'm going to leave it here, but because I want to get some other voices on, but I certainly get your point about your frustration as a parent with what you see as unresponsive teachers, especially to your child with special needs. So noted. And I want to go to Patrick in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello, Patrick.
Hello. Hi. Just on that note, one of the reasons the teachers are striking in Chicago, and it was an overwhelming vote, it wasn't like the union leadership calls them to vote. I think it was 98% favor, but they want For instance, social workers in the schools. They want extra teacher assistants in the classrooms. So I don't think that we can blame everything on the teachers for why kids are failing. We also have to look at society, whether or not we're failing kids. Kids go to school hungry. Parents are poor. We do very little for single parents in our society.
Is that an excuse after some point, though, because...
To the teachers, you
for
mean?
The teachers, because, you know, there are these various studies that show schools with similar populations, and some do well, and some do much worse.
Right. Well, I think you can say, you know, when teachers are failing and you can measure them fairly, then that would be something to do. But to measure them solely on tests and whether or not the tests are improving, I think is a failure. I think the better comparison would be compared to other countries in Europe. Take, for instance, Finland, where teachers are highly respected, are paid that way. And when you say you're a teacher, people kind of applaud you and look up to you. I think in our society, we often look down on teachers. And then we blame them even some more when the schools are failing. So I think sort of a double whammy to be a teacher in our society.
Patrick, thank you. Esther Fuchs, have you studied this internationally to his last point?
You know, I have looked at it internationally, but I think the issue... Both of these last callers really reflected how personal education is. Parents, you know, worry about their kids, and they develop their policy position on the basis of their experience with their own child, by and large. Of course, that's no way to make public policy and, you know, to generalize that. Teachers don't look you in the eye, as your previous caller said. It's kind of unfair completely. She had a bad experience. It put her in a situation in which she generalized broadly. And then the second caller, again, creates these ridiculous generalizations about the system. You know, there is a big problem here. The teachers' unions historically hadn't really stepped up to the plate to do much about it. The reformers came in and essentially said, we've got to change this. Now the issues are pretty clear. I think it's actually pretty clear. We even know what some of the solutions are. And there has been some political will in place to make changes. I agree the budgets are not large enough in a lot of schools that have to handle kids with high needs or kids from poor backgrounds. And so on the right, no one wants to recognize that one size does not fit all and that certain kids in certain environments need a lot more support services, like social workers, like special ed teachers who really don't have large numbers of kids in the classroom. But it's so politicized now, both at the local level and in national politics, that you don't get some rational policymakers sitting down in a room and figuring out what's good for kids. And frankly, in the political world, when my experience was when people started their conversation with it's all about the kids, I was ready to get up and leave the room. That was a clue that it wasn't going to be all about the kids.
Well, you could say that from either side, though, right?
Yes, all sides.
Yes. My guest on WNYC for just another few minutes is Esther Fuchs from the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University. She has studied Chicago politics, Chicago schools, as well as having been an advisor to Mayor Bloomberg in his first term on education and other things. You know, I think and we just have 3 minutes left, but the first time you came on this show, I'll bet, was 20 years ago to talk specifically about Chicago schools under Chancellor Vallis when they were implementing that decentralization school accountability program. And you were excited about it, and everybody was excited about it, and this was going to be the great progressive hope. And here we are 20 years later, and they have these dismal graduation rates. And the stat I saw today, 6% who start in the public schools in Chicago have a college degree by the time they're 25. Was the whole thing a failure? And does that mean that the accountability movement, as it's being promoted by management, is basically a failure?
No, I don't think the whole thing is a failure. I think, you know, we had 30, maybe even 40 years of basically paying little attention to our public school systems in inner cities. mayors did not want accountability. I mean, Michael Bloomberg literally is one of the first mayors who says, hold me accountable. They didn't, because politically everybody understood that this would be difficult. And so even Mayor Daley in Chicago understood it would be difficult, but he said, you cannot leave the status quo in place. We have to work on change. And I think now that the reform movement has been in place in, for a certain amount of time, the problem is better understood. I think, you know, Jeff Canada up in the Harlem Children's Zone will explain this in the best way. His model tends to work and doesn't work perfectly because it's holistic. In low-income communities where you don't have the infrastructure of a supportive family often, you need a setting, a school setting, which is more than the traditional public school, right. You know, where they're providing health clinics and weekend programs and after-school programs
but that's
and
a
support
lot,
for kids.
That's and what's that's, being, isn't that what's being cut in New York? And that's a lot more than holding teachers accountable via standardized
right.
tests.
That's exactly right. And so you need to hold teachers accountable partly by standardized tests, but not completely. That has to be in the mix. But that's right. To pretend that every school in New York or any place in the country has the same set of challenges and therefore the model is going to be similar, whether it's a traditional public school or a reform model, is beyond ridiculous. You know, the most interesting study about performance in schools has to do with parent engagement.
And we have 30 seconds, Esther.
Where
go ahead.
Parents are engaged, schools do well. Well, what about the schools where parents are engaged? Do we abandon those kids? You know, we need to be reasonable about public schools and take the politics out of it. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case.
Esther Fuchs from the School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University, former advisor on education and other things to Mayor Bloomberg on the Chicago teacher strike. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's now 10:28, and we will take just a few seconds of silence now, a moment of silence, to commemorate the moment 11 years ago right now when the North Tower of the World Trade Center collapsed. We will talk about the rebuilding of the Trade Center site and do other 9/11 remembrances later in the program. Up next, with the Vito Lopez scandal lifting the veil on New York's backroom politics, we will ask who are the party bosses and how do they wield power in 21st century New York? Stay tuned.